We live in a highly secular age, and when you think about all the different things that have great influence on society, sermons is not one of the things that comes to mind. But in previous times, there are ways in which sermons were extremely important in the American experience. For example, Ronald Reagan loved the metaphor of America as a city on a hill. Well, where does that come from? Well, we know it comes, well, if you know the Bible, you know it comes from Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount. But in the as it was applied to the American experience, it comes from a sermon by the Reverend John Winthrop, leader of the Puritans, as they were coming over in 1630, and they founded Boston, the city of Boston. And anyway, the role of sermons in America is much, much greater, especially in the creation of America and the freedoms we enjoy, than people have any clue about that. We're going to talk about this right now with Dr. Peter Loback. He is the founder and the president emeritus of Providence Forum, and I'm yours truly, Jerry Newcomb, having the privilege to serve as the executive director of Providence Forum. So welcome to this portion of Vocal Point, and we are so glad, Dr. Loback, to have you back on.
It's always a pleasure, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Sure. I'm going to sit down and let you ask eloquent about the importance of sermons in the American experience, especially the early parts. And I want to ask you first of all this. What is an Election Day sermon, and was it important?
So we know that the word election is a very biblical word. The churches have debated through the years, what exactly does it mean when you has he chosen before the foundations of the world in Ephesians 1:4. The fact that God made a choice of the people, the word chosen there is the word from which we get the word election. It's a word that comes right from the Greek and then Latin languages that means the making of a choice. It was recognized that running through the Bible that God made a choice. He chose Moses. He chose Joshua. He chose David. Jesus, when he came, he chose his disciples to serve him. So the idea of God's purpose of making a choice runs through the scriptures. We think of Israel as God's chosen people. So the idea of a choice is there, and that biblical metaphor of language became part of the language of democracy and republican government in the West as the Bible had influenced the Reformation of the West and the culture. They said that God makes a choice. Elders were chosen to lead the church in various ways. We read in the book of Acts. So in the same way, we who are now being represented by officials, they are chosen by the people. There is an election. Taking out of the crowd a person or a group of people to become the representative leaders with authority over the people that they govern. So the election idea has even its etymology or its origin of its word flows from the biblical tradition. Now, when this begins to be done in a culture that was living so strongly in the aftermath of the printed Bible. Remember, the Bible was the most important printed book in early America. The bestsellers that were in that time came directly to support the Bible, like the psalm book, so you could sing the psalms, or the early readers, the New England Primer, basically a shorter catechism based on biblical truth. The Bible was the core of learning. Families were getting the Bible, and that was their where you'd learn to read by reading the Bible. So biblical ideas from government, biblical ideas from education came together when there was a time then to elect an official. And because of that biblical background, they recognized that government is, in according to the scriptures, to be in league in a godly sense with the values of the Bible. The Bible does not establish a nation that is officially God's chosen people on the earth. That was what Israel's role was, to bring the Messiah. But they recognized that every civil government, every political entity had the right to exist. But if the Bible had come and the salvation of Christ had taken root and the church was present, that the leaders that would be governing the people were important to be not only recognized as authorities, but also to be disciplined and trained and guided by the Bible itself. And so that meant when you were choosing leaders, you didn't want to just let anybody run for office. You hoped there would be someone that respected the Bible, that had a faith in Christ, that had a tradition of judging with biblical wisdom, that had worked and disciplined himself to be an effective leader, that had had good fruit for the good of the commonwealth. And so a preacher who would have an influence in the community, and the church was one of the key social engines of early America. People would gather together on the Lord's Day not only to be instructed, but they would remember that the church was the vehicle to take care of the orphans and the widows, to make sure that education was being done effectively for those that did not learn, and that they needed books and caring for people that were impoverished. The church was a great social engine. So the pastor was not only, if you will, a spiritual leader, he was a community leader. And he would call the people together as elections were looming and remind the people, and perhaps if an official running for office was in his congregation, what their duties were: to be a godly magistrate and to be wise citizens and electors in making this election possible. That became a normative process running through New England in particular, and there are wonderful collections of these sermons that have been put together by scholars that have gone back and found them and republished them just to get a sense of how earnest and deeply people were in having godly biblical leaders. Now, as we come to the American Revolution era, you can realize that there were differences of churches' opinions on what was the right thing to do. There were loyalist sermons, and there were also sermons that were in favor of American independence. There were sermons that were preached in light of the rising unbelief from the French Revolution and concerns that that would sweep into America, because America had worked so closely with France in the era of the Revolution, so that they wanted to distance themselves from that unbelief and that deistic rejection of the Bible. So for many, many years, well into the 1800s, the idea of election sermons were a key part of what would happen. In fact, we have some examples of people who were going to serve in government who were ministers, and their sermons were preached as they were preparing to take their office. A classic example is John Witherspoon of Princeton, the College of New Jersey, where he preaches to his people and say, "I am going to Philadelphia to the Congress, and the decisions we are making there may cost you your very lives." He realized they were going to be talking about independence. And he was saying, "You must not be just a cultural Christian in these days. Your blood may be shed. Mm. Are you a believer in Jesus Christ? Eternity is before you." He said, "Normally I don't bring politics into the pulpit, but today I must, because the cause is so great and your soul is in jeopardy. Do you know the Lord Jesus?" What a powerful sermon that was
for a
politician minister to preach on the way to the Congress that declared independence.
If I may interrupt you, right now, one of the professors to this day at Princeton is Dr. Robert George, who's a very committed Catholic, and he said about 5 years ago, after I believe it was the same-sex marriage decision, he said the days of comfortable Christianity are over. And it's very similar to what you were just saying that Dr. Witherspoon said. So these sermons were very influential. And I understand George Washington and basically all the founding fathers, to a man, sat under the tutelage and listened to sermons. It was extremely important. In fact, when the Constitutional Convention was beginning to wind down and maybe it wasn't even going to succeed, Ben Franklin, and we could talk about this in depth at some future discussion, but he basically gave a impassioned plea that they needed to pray, and they adopted a variation of his request for prayer. They all went to a church service in Philadelphia around July 4th, and they listened to a sermon by the Reverend William Rogers, who was, you know, basically proclaiming and liberty and so forth. And they all prayed together, and at least they were able to finish the job of creating a constitution. The founding fathers listened to sermons. Wax eloquent on that, if you would.
Yeah, there's no question about it. We know that George Washington, which we've said in other discussions, was a sermon collector. He listened to them. In fact, the family records indicate that on Sundays, George and Martha would spend the afternoon where he would read a published sermon to his wife for their Sabbath day devotions. It's quite remarkable. He made a point to read a sermon every week to his wife. So he was preaching by reading to his own family. So these are critical parts of how values were disseminated. They were published, if they were great sermons, and circulated. But remember, the idea of meeting together on a Sunday not only had, if you will, the spiritual significance of nurturing, but it was also part of how a community identified. It was creating, if you will, a civil society. The church was part of the public square where people would hear a preacher and they would come together and they would learn, and that preacher's views then became part of the general education of the community. The sermon was absolutely critical, so much so that it was only at the very end of the 1800s that the movement came to change the requirement of universities to have half of its board as ordained ministers. Can you imagine that? Half of the board of all the universities and leadership of America up until the early 1900s were made up of clergymen, because they believed that their spiritual values and their wisdom needed to permeate the entire educational enterprise one way or another. So the clergy were looked at not as extraneous, useless, costs with strange ideas, but rather people that were custodians of the dearest values of the country. Sure. And obviously that's why when we look at the Declaration of Independence, the notion of God runs through it, where we're told we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. There's the laws of nature and of nature's God. There's an appeal to the supreme judge of the world. And there's a dependence on the providence of God as they pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. That they were preaching, and that they were laymen, except for John Witherspoon. They were there, and they were appealing to the theological grid that they all heard and learned in their school, in their church, and in the culture. So the sermons were absolutely critical and were a key part of their lives.
Okay, we have about a minute and a half left. I just want to mention this. When you think about the classic speech, one of the best speeches in all of American history in the 1960s, 1963, August 28, I Have a Dream, that is a sermon by a Baptist minister. I Have a Dream, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Great speech, and there's biblical references in there. Every valley shall be exalted.
I think if we had time, it would be wonderful to go through some of the high water mark speeches of American history. You go to the second inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln, and it's a sermon. Yeah. It's George Washington's first inaugural address. It's a sermon on providence.
Yeah.
We come now to Martin Luther King, and we think, well, of course we honor this man. We forget he's a Baptist minister, and his greatest messages are sermons that he's preaching to the nation, filled with the Bible and biblical truth. And so we need to remember that as much as we run from the Bible, we can't understand our history, our music, our culture, our civilization, or even world history without being biblically literate. And that is why even the Supreme Court has recognized you cannot entirely banish the Bible from even a secular school system, or else you can't understand most of the fields that you're working with, because they're filled with truths that came from the Bible that had been disseminated through generations of people, through clergy preaching and teaching and guiding them. So, Jerry, why don't you finish by talking about the impact of the living sermon of John Witherspoon on the founders? You have those facts in your mind. Just remind the impact of this man who is a preacher, professor from Princeton, who shaped the founders of America.
Well, he certainly did, and we're out of time, though. So let me wriggle out of that one. Providenceforum.org for more information. Dr. Peter Littleback, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gary. Okay, bye-bye.